or welcome listener, this is Louis, host of The Cove, the podcast where we go deep with crypto builders along the path to 100 million daily signers. Today I have something very special for you. We've got the one and only Solana legend on The Cove. We have a fun, wide-ranging conversation about crypto adoption, legend's North Star investing thesis moving forward, why Solana is that perfect simple approach that can bridge the gap to mainstream adoption, Solana as an asset versus ETH as an asset, what he's pumped up for currently in the crypto space, reconceptualizing NFTs into a wider use case, and is crypto heading for a winner-take-all or a multi-chain future, and of course, much, much more. Before we dive in, I'd like to share a bit about Streamflow, who make this podcast possible. Streamflow is hassle-free on-chain token operations using money streams. Stop using an Excel sheet and start using Streamflow for automated token vesting and payroll. Streamflow is the market leader on Solana. Twice audited with over 500 million in TVL, 37,000 plus streams created, and 40 plus clients, including outstanding teams like Raindrops, Hubble, Jungle DeFi, Heavenland, Gino Pets, and the list goes on. To set up hassle-free vesting contracts and automated payroll, head over to streamflow.finance and get started today. I'm super pumped to have Solana legend, managing partner at Frictionless, on today to chat all things Solana, crypto-facing apps, and basically whatever else we want to do. We want to get into it today and chat about what's happening these days. Welcome, Solana legend. Happy to have you on.
Thanks for having me on. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I've been... I reached out to you like last year, maybe about 6 months ago, and we've like intermittently had chats about doing a podcast. So I'm really pumped to finally have this happen. And I think it couldn't be at a better time. It feels like right now, you know, we're in a stage where Solana is still like a non-consensus bet, but there is like a shift in the general sentiment. At least I'm noticing that. So I think it's a great time to kind of go over the, not the bull case, but like what we're excited about, you know, being pretty deep in the Solana world. And, you know, hopefully we can share that with other people. But first, before we dive into that, like, could you give the readers who are not familiar, the 150,000 people or whatever who follow you, you know, those who aren't following you yet, like what's your background? How did you get into this game?
Yeah, definitely. I'm more on the TradFi side by background. I studied finance and econometrics at Cornell. I worked in investment banking for a number of years, for about 4 years in M&A. It was a really intense period of my life. I mean, I was working, you know, 100 plus hours, typical Wall Street experience. I advised on a lot of deals. I worked in infrastructure and energy. I did about $15 billion worth of M&A. But I always had one foot in the internet sphere. I tell people I kind of grew up on the internet and was playing MMOs my entire life, watching YouTube since the platform came out. And I guess I always was pretty attuned to the internet subculture. So I naturally discovered Bitcoin that way in 2013 through MMOs, through gaming. And I kept with it. I held small amounts of ETH and Bitcoin. But of course, I was in middle school and high school, didn't have much money to deploy. But I kept with it, right? And I think in COVID is when I had more time to go deep. At that point, in 2020, deal making had basically stopped, then it accelerated afterwards. But I was working from home and reading these different white papers, and I actually became very obsessed with it. So at that point, I discovered Solana pretty early on, and I just was blown away. I came at the space from a different angle than most people. Like most people go from Bitcoin to Ethereum to Solana. I pretty much went more straight to Solana. Just because I didn't have really big ETH bags. So I guess I had an unbiased and objective view of the space, right? I could look at it more objectively, not through the lens of a bag holder, but through the lens of like someone who is a user of this stuff, right? And for me, it was that, I don't know, broadband to fiber optic moment when I first did a Solana transaction. I thought, you know, for people that, you know, aren't super, you know, big on these early blockchain principles and ideology, this makes just a ton more sense. This is much more like a Web 2 like experience. So all of those feelings were validated throughout summer 21. I built a pretty large Twitter account. I got 100,000 followers in my first 6 months. And I think, we can get into more of that, but that's kind of the overview.
Yeah, what was your first dApp that you used on Solana? Was that the light bulb moment immediately, or was it through using Solana for a while?
I guess the first dApp I used messing around was like the Break Solana, just spamming the keyboard. That's not really a dApp, but that was the first time I realized like one keystroke was one transaction, and it was like pretty much instant feedback. And as a gamer, and also having used Ethereum, right? And seeing Ethereum, you know, just how slow it was. And like, also just, I think everyone has that painful moment, right? Where you have a transaction fail and you still have to pay the gas fees. Like there's small moments like that in the user experience that define, you know, whether someone likes it or not, right? And these are like make or break, game breaking moments. And for me, I experienced those pretty early on. With Bitcoin, I couldn't do anything with it except like buy more. And I went on Twitter and people are just talking about stacking sats. And at the time there was no stacks, there were no ordinals. And then Ethereum I found was very interesting, and the community was super like intellectually advanced and academic, almost like very, very sophisticated researchers and everything. But I felt the user experience just wasn't there. I felt this was like an early artifact of the internet, which was extremely significant, obviously, in the innovations they've brought, but I didn't really feel it was mass adoption ready at all.
Yeah, arguably nothing much has changed since then either. I mean, the L2s are still complicated. I was using Arbitrum yesterday, and you know, MetaMask still quotes the fee in ETH, even though you're paying like not in Arbitrum tokens, but like it still quotes the wrong, like the mainnet price, even though you're on Arbitrum. I mean, just these little things where it's like, even me as a very experienced user, I was confused. Like, why is it saying it needs $7 for a transaction on Arbitrum? And then I asked an ETH friend and he's like, oh yeah, it's still quoting like as if you're on mainnet. Like, it's so confusing.
Yeah, I completely agree. And honestly, like, sorry to interrupt you, but I think it's an important point that's worth speaking to. Like, really, I think the simplest approach is the most elegant, right? And scaling on the first shard, if possible, is really underrated, because from a user experience, think about how much simpler it is, right? For example, my friend tried to do some stuff on layer twos, and he went and bought the wrong USDC and sent it to the address and lost his money, right? So it's like, in a time where I think adoption, and we can talk about this later, but crypto adoption is pretty limited so far of people doing stuff on chain, in a time where adoption and liquidity is low and fragmented, I think we need less complexity, not more. And I think Solana is almost that simple brain dead approach, right? Of just one layer one coin, one USDC, just really nice and simple. And I think for most users, that's actually a big plus, not a negative.
Yeah. So I think that segues us nicely into, you know, what you're working on, I guess, when you're not the legend, and that's Frictionless Capital. So can you tell us a bit about like the thesis behind, you know, you and Logan with regard to Frictionless, and I guess how you came to that thesis?
Yeah, definitely. It was a long time coming. I think what people don't realize about Frictionless is it was several years in the making. This is not like a spur of the moment thing. When I met Logan, I was blown away by his technical background and his ability to dissect complex technical problems and put them into few words. I think his background at Tesla in product really helped that. And it really validated a lot of what I had been feeling on the community and just personal side. I had the tech understanding. He gave that to me, right? And I think that's really what gave us the conviction to go hard on this, because what we embarked on after shaking hands, we met at actually a Breakpoint 21. We shook hands on the fund and we figured it was kind of a bad time to start the fund. The macro picture was turning bearish quickly. And while it was an easy time to raise, we felt it was a very, very bad time to deploy. And, you know, looking back, it's good that we didn't because we'd be in a pretty rough spot right now. So we just figured, look, let's do a few years of research and let's really get down to this from first principles, right? From a first principle discussion, contrasting these blockchains, apples to apples, right? There's a lot of narratives in this space. There's a lot of noise. Unless we're able to sit down and have these first principles discussions and put this, you know, put pen to paper on this, we're not going to really be able to know 100% if, you know, one thesis is better or worse. So that's exactly what we did. We spent a few years cooking on it and contrasting these blockchains and these applications from first principles, right? And I think emerging from that, we have a super clear and pinpointed view of the space. We're not like most funds that you know, kind of throw darts and or take an index or and kind of follow narratives. We have proprietary research. We're laser focused on a very small subgroup of chains called next generation blockchains that have parallel processing, low latency, high throughput, and minimal fees. And really, it's those features that classify what is next gen, but more than anything, they're able to scale with increasing hardware, so compute and bandwidth, internet speeds. And I think under that kind of core North Star, which is a next generation blockchain thesis, we're trying to invest in teams that can go the distance and that can outperform the underlying coin of the chain that they're built on. So I think an early example of that is Backpack. That was our first investment. But yeah, very, very happy to be in the game. Yeah, this is the ultimate way for us to play the game, and we're very excited about Frictionless.
And with regard to the next generation, the way that you're segmenting or, you know, differentiating between next generation blockchains and, I don't know, legacy blockchains or what the right term is, like, is that thesis coming essentially from Solana? Like, do you have the same conviction in other high throughput chains? And how do you think about, for example, Aptos and Sui?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, the reality is if we had started this fund in 2015 or 2016, I think Ethereum would have been classified as next generation at that point in time. Like I said, Ethereum changed the game, right? I think the magic of smart contracts and programmability is legitimately one of the biggest breakthroughs ever. And I think without that, we probably wouldn't even be having this conversation. So we tip our hat to the Ethereum devs, and they remain some of the smartest devs in the space by far. But I think the core difference is that, you know, I'm not an engineer. I don't look at this from like the coding perspective. I look at this from like a business and strategy and product perspective. And I think it's pretty rare in human history that, you know, the first or second iteration of a technology is actually the one that scales to mass adoption. If you look at airplanes or, you know, automobiles, printing press, smartphones, whatever technology
social
you want.
Networks.
Social networks, right? All of these examples are valid. And I think it's just a case of the first or second iteration typically, you know, make some design choices at the architecture level that are impossible to patch, and they suffer from technical debt that's unsurmountable. And you basically have two options: tear down the house and rebuild from the ground up, or fall behind to a newer entrant, right? And I think that's kind of the lens through which I view the space, and I think blockchains are no different.
And you said you guys invested, your first investment was Backpack. I'm super excited for Backpack. I think I see a ton of potential there. Could you, I guess, share a bit around like what kind of projects, like what would differentiate a project that you guys would invest in versus one that you wouldn't invest in?
Yeah, definitely. I think Backpack's a great example. I've known Armani for a few years and Tristan as well. I actually used to work with them at FTX. But I think truly, what we're most interested in, on top of like investing in these next generation blockchains, is finding applications and products that are uniquely leveraging the properties and behavior of these new chains, right? So there's a lot of primitives that are enabled, uniquely enabled on the Solanas of the world, like order books, DPIN, microtransactions, compressed NFTs, executable NFTs, all these things that we know of under that kind of only possible on Solana meme that's, you know, making waves on the gram or sorry, on Twitter. But I think really it's leaning into those only possible on X type projects, because I think that's the bleeding edge of innovation, right? And I think similar to how, you know, when you put a GPS and a camera on the iPhone, there were new applications that uniquely leveraged those, like Instagram with a camera roll, or you know, Maps and Uber with the GPS. We really want to focus on those incremental experiences that have never happened before, that are uniquely enabled by the chain that they're built on, right? And I think Backpack is a great example of that. We're incredibly excited to be partnered with them, and I think more than that, I think just the founders that can go the distance. I think there's a lot of founders that can find product market fit at a certain point in time. The good ones can, but the best ones are able to pivot, and they have that kind of founder market fit where, you know, it's choppy waters out there, man. Like, you know, being able to navigate the storm and really be the captain of the ship, in terms of like the best analogy I can give is like not only putting the ship on course, but keeping it on course throughout the night is really what we're looking for from the founder perspective.
So it's kind of like one part like innovative product, and another part is around the characteristics of the founder or the founding team.
Correct. Yeah. I think just like a very, very strong engineering focus. It's a very technical space, whether people like it or not. That's just the reality of it. And I think having a very, very clear view and vision of what they want to accomplish and assembling an excellent team around it is just a requirement.
Got you. And you mentioned the only possible on Solana, I guess, meme or narrative that's been cooking for a while now. Like, is that... I see that kind of as like the best part of Solana, basically. Like the best argument for Solana is when you can take an example and be like, this is actually only possible on Solana. This is not something that is... Because if you think about, like, you know, you were mentioning phones, social networks, like different sort of, I guess, new technical primitives. It's like, it's often the new product that unlocks new use cases that actually tends to win the competition, right? Like, you can buy, you know, 10 different Windows laptops, but actually, like, the MacBook Air is the one that, you know, a lot of, like, I think the majority of people who have the money would opt for, because it's just like, it differentiates itself from the competition in like a really clear way. And I think that's what always excited me with Solana. You can use 10 different EVM chains, and they will all these days be, you know, fast, I guess, but not as fast as Solana, not as cheap as Solana. They're all kind of in the mix, but Solana is, for me, very differentiated as an actual user. I completely, you know, am on board with that concept. And myself, with regard to Aptos and Sui, you know, I'm interested to see how they go. I think it's cool to have competition and to see that high throughput space expanding and having, you know, more competition. It can only be a good thing. I'm curious what your take is with regard to Solana, the asset. So, you know, if you look at the Bankless guys, they talk a lot about ETH, the asset, or the triple point asset, like these kinds of narratives that they have. I have the sense, at least my perception, is that Solana, the asset, does not have a clear narrative. And, you know, from Anatoly, for example, he doesn't push it in the same way as for example, ETH is pushed. How do you think about Solana as an asset?
Yeah, I think first of all, Ethereum is way further down the road, right? They've got an extra 3-4 years on Solana. And I think that's been a lot more time for them to find those early developers, find those early evangelists, and really, you know, really focus on value accrual lately, right? I think like value accrual is honestly the kind of one of the later things a protocol founder should be worried about. And I kind of agree with Tully's approach of, you know, just focusing on the tech and enabling unique and delightful experiences on Solana, right? For developers and for users. And I think there's plenty of time to worry about value accrual later, but when you look at the metrics, there's just not very many people using blockchains. I think a few hundred million people hold crypto passively, like in their Coinbase or whatever. But in terms of people signing transactions on chain with their private keys, it's very, very small subset of that. So I think, focusing on users and adoption and developers, I think is probably the most worthwhile endeavor. There's a very clear path to Solana being deflationary with enough activity, right? I think, you know, half of priority fees are burned and there's a bunch of other levers. So I think the value accrual is there. It's more just about, you know, what are you trying to do, right? Is this going to be a global execution layer and a shared state at the speed of light? Do you want to solve that problem first, or do you want to kind of start talking about tokenomics and value accrual before you have many people using it? I think it's kind of putting the cart before the horse. And I kind of agree with Tolly's focus there.
Yeah, actually, you took the word right out of my mouth. Putting the cart before the horse is exactly how I've thought about it previously as well. It's like you're worrying about, you know, if it's truly going to be as big as we think it can be big, then you're worrying about like these minor details before you even actually get to the main sort of the main event. It seems like the order is not quite, or the sequence is not quite right, quite right there. So with regard like to, I assume that you're mostly excited about Solana, but you know, we can also speak about generically, you know, what other blockchain innovations are coming out on other chains that you're excited for. Up until recently, I believe that people roughly split things between like gaming, NFTs, and DeFi. And now we have DPIN on Solana. But I'm curious just like to get your sort of pick your brain a bit. Like, what are you pumped for? What's exciting you? You know, I was on the recent Twitter space for Backpack and the Mad Lads releasing, and I could tell that you were pretty jacked up about that, pretty pumped. So, you know, I'm curious just to like generally get your take these days. What are you really pumped for in the crypto space?
Yeah, I think starting with Backpack, I'm super excited about the core innovation around tokenized code, right? And XNFTs. I think sometimes you hear Armani talk about this, but I think the wallet is a little bit of Trojan horse and Mad Lads as well, to kind of put people on to the wonders of XNFTs. And I think this, it's a standard breaking standard, and people similar to the early kind of days of the iPhone and iOS, they're still playing around. It's still kind of a joke. You know, they had the little Rickroll video with the executable NFTs, and these are kind of early expressions of what you can do with XNFTs, but I think people are scratching the surface. It's something that is going to be built on, and it's going to be twisted and turned and molded in ways that we can't even imagine. Similar to iOS, right? I think if you look at those early apps, it was like, you know, the beer app and the little lighter on your phone and Fruit Ninja. They were just simple little toys. But there's a great article by Chris Dixon where he says, you know, the next big thing starts out looking like a toy. And I think I really, really agree with that take. And also just looking at Backpack more broadly, I think, again, what kind of unique experiences and behavior can you enable when you have all of your entire ecosystem and crypto life natively inside the wallet, and it's tailored to mobile, right? Like, what new experiences and new behavior and new distribution frontier does that unlock for how people interact with their crypto and their favorite dApps and applications? Very excited about that. I think DPIN is a sleeping giant right now. It's gun to my head. If you had to say legend, what's 10 years from now, what are blockchains going to be used for? You know, a lot, I'd say DPIN 100%.
DPIN? Maybe we can just define it for the listeners who are not familiar.
Yeah. DPIN stands for Decentralized Physical Infrastructure Network. So essentially it amounts to taking a, in real life network or infrastructure, such as like decentralized compute in the case of Render, or bootstrapping a network like Helium, or mapping roads like Hive Mapper. But it the core principle is that you kind of incentivize and align resources, whether that's human capital or hardware or devices around the world, to accomplish some specific thing, right? To bootstrap a network, to build out a new 4G network, or to map the roads much better in the United States and around the world, or to provide decentralized compute, like in the case of Render, right? They do opening title scenes for like Game of Thrones and Marvel and the Avengers and all this stuff. So I think those kind of businesses that have an in real life component where you're incentivizing and mobilizing a fleet of devices or people at scale, I think that's a use case that is very tangible. And it's something that is a concrete example of like, this is exactly what tokens were, you know, designed for. This is what incentive alignment can accomplish. And I think in some ways it solves a cold start problem a little bit with, you know, the capital costs of building out a new network historically have been like prohibitively high, even for like the AT&Ts and T-Mobiles of the world. They have to raise a bond or, you know, spend tens of billions of dollars. But I think in this day and age, just with the connectivity we have and tokenization uniquely enabling kind of a disruption of that business, which I think is very cool.
Yeah, I like it as well, because with most when cases where you cross into the real world, let's say from the digital crypto world, you have like an Oracle problem, or there's, you know, there's a lot of complication that comes with, you know, tracking real world assets, or trying to measure something that is, you know, happening in the real world and then represent that on the blockchain. Whereas with the DPIN projects, like they kind of naturally combine real world with, you know, internet connected devices that then provide the data in a way that it feels like a natural fit, right?
Right. And I think going into the age of AI, this is only going to accelerate. I mean, I think Render has been doing quite well. The demand for CPUs is just, and GPUs is just up massively. So I think this is the era where people can really ride this wave, and whether they're a user or a builder, I think DPIN is going to be a super, super fertile ground. Just super excited for that space to continue to develop. I think people are trying different tokenomics, they're trying different incentive alignment schemes, but there will be that light bulb moment at some point where someone has a breakaway application or platform. And I think, you know, we're really investing for that day, but also excited to see many of them coming to Solana. I think the features and the infrastructure here are just very hard to ignore.
Yeah, we saw Helium's already minted like 1 million NFTs as part of their migration. And that's, you know, that would have been prohibitively expensive on most other chains. So it kind of reinforces why they chose to migrate to Solana. Do you have any takes on the NFT ecosystem or the DeFi ecosystem? I mean, both, we pronounce their death every 2 weeks and then they're back and it's bullish again. But what's your take currently on NFTs and DeFi?
Yeah, I think NFTs, from someone who was one of the first, like, probably 500 or 1,000 wallets, like, trading these JPEGs on chain, they've come a very long way. When I was first trading NFTs on Solana, there was almost nothing. I mean, there was basically no marketplaces. A huge amount of OTC trading in Discord wasn't even on CT. Just a handful of projects, pre-Metaplex standard. Yeah, it was a different vibe. There was no tooling, no candy machine, probably months between each drop. Similar to kind of how it is now, but in the bull market, it was, I think, 30 or 40 or 50 drops per day. I think ultimately the 2021 business model is kind of dead and buried. You know, the roadmap with announcements and royalty farming and stuff, I think it's over. We're going to need fresh innovation. We're going to need a new take on what NFTs are and aren't. And I think I wrote a pretty big thread on this, talking about, you know, like NFTs, like where are we and where are we headed? I think the core value prop remains the same. I mean, digital assets, specifically JPEGs, they're one of the few digital native products kind of denominated in crypto that have been able to achieve demand in the real world, right? Like people would actually, you know, buy crypto and kind of get on-ramped and involved in the ecosystem just to buy a JPEG. So I think they have been and they will remain a vehicle for mass crypto onboarding. So very, very powerful. But I think at their core, I think people need to go back to basics and remember that NFTs are also just kind of a digital deed of ownership. So what we refer to as digital collectibles are very different from that. It's a smaller subset, I think more of a niche internet group and early community insider kind of thing. But I think people need to think more broadly with NFTs. They need to remember, like, you know, people used to buy a house and store a piece of paper, like the title and the deed, in a like a trust company building, right? It's like a bunker in the middle of town where you could go and you could verify who owned what. And, you know, if you own the title and the deed, you own the house. And I think that's just a system that's 1,000 times worse than what we have today. Today, we have NFTs, which are publicly verifiable on the blockchain. Anywhere in the world with this slow internet connection, you can still verify you own something. And I think we need to lean into what NFTs are more broadly than digital collectibles. I think the digital collectible meta is interesting to me, but the fundamental pillars of utility are still just community more than anything. I think utility as a whole is kind of a meme and it's a fleeting concept, right? It's here today and it's gone tomorrow. People should definitely recognize the networking aspects, which are important and valuable. But I think people have lost sight a little bit and they've gotten a little bit lost in the sauce on the digital collectible side, but there's been a big reset, right? And I think people are kind of going back to basics and realizing maybe they've overcomplicated this a little bit. It was just about having fun with your friends and online and interacting with people and building community and unique kind of virtual experiences. I think people have kind of tried to build Fortune 500 companies based on a 10K drop, and suddenly everyone needs to be a game developer or a crack businessman, when reality is this is not equity, right? It's like pseudo equity, but it's never going to actually be a claim on the company's ownerships or assets or cash flow or anything like that. So people have kind of over financialized these NFTs massively, but I think a back to basics is warranted.
Just shortly, with regard to Backpack, do you see an opportunity for Backpack to become like a new kind of launching site for new NFT projects where they're able to actually have a bit more utility by having actual applications in, you know, XNFTs?
Yeah, no doubt. I think Backpack is a new frontier for distribution, whether you're an NFT project that wants to sell a collection out, or you're an established business with an application that wants to do your go-to-market on Solana or in crypto. I think Backpack is just an amazing avenue for you to do that, right? I think from a developer perspective, you can get plugged in. You can convert an application or a website to an XNFT in a matter of minutes. Super, super low friction curve. And I think also you don't have to touch any RPC infrastructure, which is something that many people don't realize. It's quite literally 10x simpler to build an XNFT than it is almost anything else in crypto right now. So I think it's an avenue that more and more people are going to lean into. And you kind of have a captive like user base there, right? In the Mad Lads, you have these power users that are mega fans of Backpack. They're here for the culture, and you have your kind of true fans right there to kind of target and to market to and to give promotions to. So I think it's an incredibly elegant way to go to market. And as someone who's really involved in the Mad Lads community, I can tell you people are very excited, but they don't fully grasp this concept that, you know, a lot of brands and companies are now looking at Backpack and saying, look, in the past, if I wanted to go to market in crypto or on Solana, I had to do, you know, Twitter spaces and pretty much like talk to these people one by one, you know, like reach out to an influencer, maybe they do a thread, or I can do an AMA inside someone's Discord. It was a very fragmented and difficult process to actually get in front of people. Whereas Backpack gives you that centralized touch point. You can do airdrops to the entire user base. You can push notifications. You can just have the passive distribution of your XNFT in the app store. And I think that's where a lot of builders are saying, look, like this is kind of the missing piece of distribution that we needed. And they're looking at Backpack.
Nice. Yeah, really pumped to see, you know, how that eventuates in the next couple of months. Just lastly, can you touch on DeFi and how you see that, particularly on Solana?
Yeah, DeFi has been just slammed really hard. I mean, I think the FTX and Alameda meltdown particularly affected DeFi, but it doesn't take away from the fact that Solana just has the right features for being a DeFi chain, right? I'm bullish on efficiency, like call it, you know, going from cash to Visa or Visa to USDC SPL or whatever. I think just the efficiency gains in each of those jumps are massive. And whether it's payments or anything really, like the micro transaction fees that we have on Solana enable you to do things that are very unique. I mean, you can launch a token more cheaply here than anywhere else. You can transact, you can swap, you can send it from one account to another very, very cheaply. I think developers can also ideate freely for a fraction of the cost of other areas. I think it's really about just like rising from the ashes, right? And rebuilding primitives that have existed in the past and just taking it slow. There's no rush. We just need to get it right, get the right primitives in place and organically build traction. I think like there's just so many wonderful things you can do on Solana that you can't do anywhere else. Like even just claiming accrued interest, right? I probably have to wait a year or 2 years on Ethereum before I can even claim my interest, right? Just because of the gas fees. So on Solana, you can claim 20 minutes of interest or a day's worth of interest, and it makes sense. So I'm very bullish on that. I'm very bullish on payments. I think DeFi overall, there's a tendency to do a lot of Ponzinomics and circular reasoning. We kind of need to break out of that. I think in many ways, I don't want to force like the same business models as on Ethereum. I think many people would love to kind of keep hitting their head against a brick wall there. But again, we need to lean into what's uniquely possible on Solana. And I think if we look at the main tailwinds we have around Solana mobile stack, compressed NFTs, there's already super clever stuff being done there with the metadata, XNFTs, and all these different things. I think some amalgamation of that can definitely be used in DeFi as well. And I'd like to see more of like more cross-pollination like between the NFT community and DeFi. I think they've kind of existed in a vacuum. You've had like your NFT degen camp and you've had your DeFi builder and glass chewer camps, but they're getting more blurred, right? I think Mad Lads is the first collection to kind of build a bridge. And I think they're all tokens at the end of the day, right? Non-fungible or fungible. I think we need to put our heads together and really decide, you know, what kind of a chain, what kind of a community we're going to have here and build back better, essentially.
Yeah, got you. There's a little part of me that likes that they were disconnected, because when DeFi was going terribly, you could pop into a NFT space and all the bros were like in a great mood, having a great time. So it kind of separated it nicely. But I completely get where you're coming from in terms of building novel products by combining different elements of both of those categories. So we're about to hit time, legend, but I'd love to get your prediction. So when you look at the future, when you're, you know, coming up with your thesis, when you're investing, are you seeing a blockchain world where there's many different chains, maybe even hundreds of different chains and L2s and L3s? Or do you feel that we will end up concentrating into a handful or just one or two chains? Like, is it a winner takes all, or do you see a many chain future?
I think it's a winner take most. There's going to be one or two standout victors in each category. If you're like the execution chains of the world, there's going to be one or two. The first having vast majority of market share, I'd say 85% plus. Then if you're a settlement chain, maybe that's another race. If you're a privacy chain, but at the end of the day, I don't think they're going to be that separated. I think there can be a privacy layer on Solana. There can be layer twos on Solana. Getting the layer one architecture right is the most important thing. That's the fundamental bottleneck, the block space at the layer one. If you get that architecture right, the way Solana has, it allows you to run faster and harder than any other chain. And I think we haven't tested the limits of what's possible on the layer one, right? I think block times are 400 milliseconds now. Until we're pushing up against the physical limitations of light through fiber optic, which I think are like 200 ms or something around the world, or even faster, we haven't gone hard enough, right? People are adding more cores to CPUs and GPUs, so it's kind of like we're at a point in time where people think Moore's law is dead, but it's not, and these layer ones will continue to scale with increasing internet speeds and increasing compute. So I think people really, really underestimate how hard Solana can run. And FireDancer is coming. That's going to be absolutely massive. I believe that's one of the biggest engineering projects, not only on Solana, but in all of crypto that no one's talking about. It's going to change the game. So I think truly it's about pushing layer one to the physical limitations. And those are way, way further beyond where people realize. And then from there, my prediction is that one day there will be layer twos on Solana. There will be a privacy layer. There will be all these different things. But having that level of performance and low latency and high throughput at the base layer is the most important thing, because that is the shared state at the speed of light, right? That's Tolly's vision. I firmly believe he's going to take that to the masses. And once you have that performant layer one, the world is wide open. So that's pretty much my prediction. Solana and similar chains will garner the vast majority of adoption. I think all blockchains can kind of work, but the difference between blockchains that end up ultimately being like a expensive science project and the ones that achieve meaningful adoption in the real world is going to be just what they're solving for, right? And I think Solana, on top of having amazing tech, is also solving for the right things. So incredibly bullish on them to take this vision to the nth degree. And I think people are going to be very, very blown away when they look back in time and they look at what Solana will achieve. I think it's going to seem almost obvious. Like, why didn't we think of this? There's just so much low-hanging fruit that Solana has implemented. Yeah, I've been to the end of the road. Me and Logan have talked about this. We've talked to the smartest people in the space. We've tried to find someone that can disprove our thesis, and we just haven't been able to find it. So, bullish.
I think that's the perfect note to finish the podcast on, bullish. I really like the way that you sort of lay that all out. Yeah, I'm pumped for the future. I'm happy to, you know, be part of this community and excited to see where we go. Where can folks follow you if they're not already following you?
Yeah, they can follow me on Twitter at Solana Legend. I tweet more than I should, probably. Maybe not. I've tweeted 30 or 40 tweets for the last few years. I love it. It's like my 24/7 stream of consciousness. I never schedule tweets. I just bang them out. So yeah, follow me on there and follow Frictionless's Twitter. We're shipping fresh articles, newsletters. Follow Logan Jastrzemski as well. He has a top tier podcast if you're more interested in the technical side of things. And yeah, get ready. We're gonna change the game.
Perfect. Thanks so much for coming on, Legend. It's been a real pleasure, and I'll catch you around maybe at Breakpoint.
Thanks for having me on.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you liked it, make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app. Leave us a review if you're feeling generous. And I'd also like to give a brief reminder that nothing said on the podcast is financial advice. My views are my own. And when navigating crypto, remember that you are responsible for your own assets and always do your own research.